for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Good afternoon. This is Rick Franzi, and I'm glad to have you joining me and our guest this afternoon. Our first guest will be Lewis Russell. Lewis is the president and founder of a firm, West Coast Gasket, here in Orange County, California, Brea. Lewis, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I'll be right back with you, and we're going to spend about 25 minutes this afternoon talking with Lewis. I think you'll find his story, both personally his story and his firm story, very interesting. And then in the bottom of the hour, Mike Haney, who is president and owner of S&H Rubber, will be joining us as well. But this is our seventh show, and for those of you that have been listening throughout, you know that we've covered a lot of different topics in these first seven shows, and Doug and I continue to be excited about the quality of people that are interested in being guests on our show and delivering content that helps our target audience, which are business owners and top executives, make better, more informed decisions. I encourage you, if you haven't had a chance to listen or sample some of the other shows, as you know, they're all available on the LA Talk Radio website, www.latalkradio.com. Listen to the archives and share it with a friend. Would like this show to go viral, and you can play a big part in helping that by recommending our show to other top executives and business owners and people who are aspiring to be in that position in their future. From a highlight, I'd like to let you know that next week, Doug will be hosting the show. My partner, Doug Gefeller, will be back to host the show, and he'll be interviewing Ken Pottolivo. Ken is founder and president of a firm called ProGrowth that helps service providers throughout the United States work on their business, treat their business like CEOs, and I think you'll find Ken's discussion very interesting to kind of get an update on what the economy, how the economy has affected service providers throughout North America. The week after that, I'll be back hosting a show with two people, Tom Ziancina and Les Walker. Tom is president of DataNet Solutions, and Les is president and CEO of DocuSource. Very interesting topic, again, that we'll be talking with those two gentlemen about. They both are helping firms realize the value and benefit of a paperless environment. And with all that's going on relative to the Green Initiative and firms looking for an ROI on investments, I would encourage you to be listening in and possibly even calling in and talking to Tom and Les, as they have many years of experience helping firms improve their business processes and take the wasteful paper out of their enterprises. A highlight for May, and we have quite a few of them, but a confirmed guest on May 25th will be Jan Norman. Jan, for those of you who may not know, is the writer, iWriter for the Orange County Register. She focuses on small businesses, had a very nice article in yesterday's Sunday edition of the business section. She's also an accomplished author of three different books, and we're going to be talking about what she's seeing relative to the Orange County, California market, small businesses, how they're reacting to the current economy. And so that'll be May 25th, Memorial Day. Be sure to tune in to your radios as you're laying by the pool on Memorial Day. One last thing before we get to Lewis, and that is, as you know, Doug and I use this program as an extension of the business that we run here in Southern California, Renaissance Executive Forums in Orange County. We help business owners and top executives through the forum process, and we have five distinct forum groups that meet every month and working with them to take their business to the next level. This radio show is really an outgrowth of the work that we've done working with top executives for the past 15 years. For the user that have listened before, you know that I wrote a book, and it was published last fall, called Critical Mass, and it is really a very well-written book, if I do say so myself, about what business owners and top executives can realize as a benefit or benefits from being a member of a CEO peer group. So much for the front-end discussion. I encourage you to check out our information on the web, and I thank you again for listening to our show today. It's with great enthusiasm that I welcome my first guest, Lewis Russell. As I mentioned in the introduction, Lewis is the founder and president of West Coast Gasket. And I, Lewis, I consider you and your personal story kind of a classic American entrepreneurial story. So to kind of set the stage for the other questions that we're going to cover here in the next 20 minutes, can you tell our audience a bit about your path to West Coast Gasket?
Sure, Rick. you know, I was in high school, and I met a kid in high school, a buddy of mine, and his father owned a manufacturing company, a gasket company. And father offered me a job when I turned 18, and I said, sure. And I worked half, you know, in the afternoons for him, starting salary of $1.75 an hour back in 1970. And when I graduated from high school, they offered me a full-time job, and again, I said, thank you very much, and I took it. I worked for a company called LACAL. It was L-A-C-A-L for about 4.5 years. I was in shipping. I did a little manufacturing. I was a truck driver for a little while. I ended up being on the order desk, and that was kind of one of those stories where it's not what you know, it's who you know. And being the friend of the owner, the son of the owner, helped a little bit there. But I worked hard. I got to know a few of the customers. Then about 4 or 5 years later, you know, three people from our company moved on to start their own business, the vice president in charge of sales, one of the manufacturing foremen, and one of the salesmen went off to start another business, and a couple months after that, they offered me a job, and I realized that as much as I liked working where I was, that I was kind of trapped behind the owner's son, and I was never going to be promoted beyond him, I went ahead and took that job, and it was the first employee for this little fledgling gasket manufacturing company, and gave me a lot of experience and a lot of different things. I was order desk, I was shipping department, I was production manager. I worked for them for about 4+ years, and during that time we went from about $20,000 a month in sales to about $200,000 a month in sales. During that 4 years, I got to learn a lot of things by hands-on experience. It was really a very much a teaching experience for me, learning experience for me. And I got to the point where, you know, I just time moved on, and I had grown up and decided that maybe I should be doing this for myself. So December 31st, 1978, I gave my notice, and my employer asked me to stay for a couple of weeks as so they could, you know, kind of find a replacement. And I said, sure, okay. So I worked for 2 more weeks, and on January 15th, 1979, I opened the doors. I basically, what I did was I owned a house in Orange County, and I put an office in my den and built a table in my garage and started making gaskets, so to speak. In the beginning, you know, it wasn't much. We had a phone call here and a phone call there, but, you know, you start working. I would buy dies, and then I'd take the dies down to a stamping house and bring the material, and they'd punch out the parts for me. In March of that year, I opened, rented a building over in La Habra, and stayed in that building complex for about 6 or 7 years, moving from building to building, ever larger each time. And then around 1986 or so, I bought a building in La Habra, a 10,000-square-foot building, as the company grew and the business grew. About 1991 or so, I bought another building over in Brea, which is the neighboring city of La Habra. And that was a real experience moving from La Habra to Brea, is that you're only moving 5 miles, but there's a huge parting line between La Habra and Brea. And I stayed in that building for until 1999, and we moved into our current location here in Brea, which is about 50,000 square feet. And the company has grown to about $8, $10 million a year in sales. And it's really been a fun ride. It's been 30 years now, and I've enjoyed it. It's been a lot of hard work, but it's also been a lot of fun. I mean, it afforded me not only a decent living, but a lot of freedom. Being your own boss gives you a lot of freedom to come and go as you please a little bit. You have to temper that with what the business needs, but it's been a lot of fun, and the company's grown, and it's provided myself and my family with a nice steady stream of income, and that's kind of the short version of it there, Rick.
Okay, so take me back, Lewis, to 1979 when you started the firm. What was the economy like in 1979, what were you facing into as a young entrepreneur just starting your first company?
Well, you know, we didn't have 27 or 24/7 news like we have today, and I don't think the economy was quite the front page news it is today. But as a young man, 26 years old, I didn't really realize what the economy was per se. But I just knew that I needed to start my own business, and I didn't really worry about what the economy was. I was kind of worried about my situation. What was my situation like? what did I want to do? And I wanted to try my own business and try my hand at being my own boss. So the economy wasn't my concern at the time. I don't really remember thinking too much about, oh, the economy's bad, the economy's good, now's a good time to do it, now's a bad time to do it. It was my personal timing that I really was worried about, not about the economy.
Okay. Well, you've been, your firm's been in existence for 30-plus years. You must have some key lessons learned that have contributed to your firm's longevity. Briefly, because I know we could take up the entire 19 minutes or so that we have left to talk about this, but can you give the audience some, maybe the highlights of the keys, lessons learned over the past 30 years of being in business?
Well, the number one thing, and it sounds overly simple, but customer service. You really have to take care of the customer. I don't have anything proprietary to sell here. I don't have anything people have to buy from me. So I try to kind of outsell the next guy and really provide really good customer service. The person wants it on Tuesday with a pink bow on it, they get it on Tuesday with a pink bow. Another thing I really think is important is to watch your cash flow. You can't spend every nickel that comes in the door. You really have to save a little for a rainy day. You really have to reinvest back in the business so that you have either more equipment or more opportunities in the future. So really, I think customer service and cash flow and quality of product, I mean, it just sounds so simple, but they're hard-learned rules that they just happen to be the way it is.
I'm sure there were times over the past 30 years where something as simple as don't spend everything you're bringing in, you know, as you said, save some cash. I'm sure there were times when that was harder for you to do than maybe at others, you know, times when cash flow was tight or whatever. Can you think back on those times and maybe talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, we had a lot of cash flow problems when we're buying buildings. When I bought my first building, it was a lot of cash out of pocket, and we had to come up with a lot of cash. And then the new building payment was, a little bit more than what we thought it was going to be. And you know, when you buy a piece of property for the first time, as I did back in the early '80s or middle '80s, it was just a big investment for me personally. And so some of the big cash crunch times for us was when we were moving from one building to another. Not only do you have the cost of moving, but you have the cost of downtime and the cost of, you know, maybe doing some remodel on the building, getting ready to move in. So those are the times I remember being the tightest on cash, and you just had to hope that your vendors understood if you paid a little slower than you normally did, and make sure that you saved a little cash for when that time came. So moving was the biggest expense for us.
I'm sure when you were relocating from La Habra to Brea, or for one building to the next building, it's a million little things too, though, isn't it, Louis? And they all probably cost you cash, you know, unforeseen things that you need to invest in or upgrade or replace. And I'm sure you were sitting there as the owner and the president, all that's hitting your desk. I'm sure that was a challenging time for you in the business to not only do that well, but stay focused on what you also said, which was quality products and customer service, because probably during those relocating times, you could get really internally focused. I'm sure you had to watch being not too internally focused, making sure that your products were delivered with quality and that you were speaking and talking to your clients during that time as well. Is that true?
Well, communication, I mean, I don't ever think of myself as being the sharpest knife in the drawer or whatever, but I do think that I have great communication skills, and that's one of the things that we really focus in on here at West Coast Gasket, is that we try to communicate internally and externally. You communicate with your customers about pricing, delivery, any kind of issues they might have, and internally with each other about any kind of internal issues that you may have. So I feel communication is both listening and speaking are two of the most important things that you can do. Is you can listen well and speak well. So when people listen to you, they understand what you're saying, because sometimes people don't necessarily ask. And if you're not clear, they may not ask the question about what you're saying and just take for granted they understand what you're saying. And when you're listening, if you don't understand what somebody's saying, you need to ask the question. I didn't understand exactly what you meant by that. Can you repeat it, or can you give me a better clarification? So when we were moving from one building to another. We made sure the customers understood that we're in a transition period right now, and that if deliveries are off, it's a temporary state. And with our vendors, we communicated with them that if we are going to be a little slow on our payments, that please understand that it's a temporary state, and that we will be back to our normal paying terms, which are discounting and net 30, in a very short time, and that we're working towards that. We found that if you're upfront with people and you tell people what's going on and why it's happening, they're a lot more understanding than they would be if you kind of just not communicate with them.
Right. You know, one of the things that I didn't ask you about, and maybe you could take a couple minutes and just help our listening audience, you sort of talked about West Coast Gasket, but could you distill down what it is that West Coast Gasket does?
Well, we started out as a stamping house. We would stamp out gaskets out of different materials, rubber, paper, plastic, foam, felt. You know, it's basically like a cookie cutter operation. You make a steel rule die to cut out a shape that comes over in the form of a print or a sample. And of course, today we use emails and DSX files and things like that. In the old days, they obviously just mail you a print or fax you a print. And then we'll cut it out to whatever their specifications are. And sometimes it's new jobs, sometimes it's jobs they're buying from somebody else. So that's kind of our core business. And over the last 10 years, we've purchased a couple of molded rubber companies, one that was called D-Inject Rubber. And D-Inject Rubber was a high-end, low-volume molded rubber company that would mold Viton, silicone, and some of more your exotic elastomers with metal inserts, either stainless steel, Monel, copper, brass, whatever that the customer required. And we did a lot of high-end molding. And then a couple of years ago, we bought a more low-end molding company that did more volume type of molding, and they were called Esco Rubber, and they were more interested in the plumbing aftermarket business. And they do a lot of high-volume, low-cost molding. So kind of complemented each other, the two molding companies. One was a more high-end, low-volume, and the other one was more high-volume, low-end. So it was kind of a complementary type of environment for us to have both companies that we were fortunate enough to acquire. And then at the same time we purchased the Yesco Rubber Company, we were able to buy an extrusion rubber company called Superior Rubber. And they had some extrusion business there. And they were just a small little operation, and we were one of their larger customers. And I thought that the extrusion business would complement our stamping and molding business and kind of give us kind of all three legs of a stool to stand on: stampings, moldings, and extrusions. So today we have five mold extruding machines that extrude neoprenes, bunas, Viton, silicones, EPDMs, and continuous cure, and also curing in a autoclave. So it gives us a good variety of manufacturing expertise and in-house capabilities that allow us to capture a larger variety of customers, so that even in a economic downturn or in an economic upturn, you've got a bigger net to catch more fish with, so to speak. And so it's really worked well for us. So when a customer's looking to buy a molded part or extruded part or a stamp part, they can look to West Coast Gasket because we have all those capabilities in-house. And if a customer is buying 15 stamp parts and two molded parts, and they want to do a vendor reduction, and they don't want to buy the two molded parts from, you know, vendor X, and they want to stay with one vendor, we have that opportunity to be able to be that one vendor. And the same way would be if they wanted to buy 15 molded parts and one stamp part. They have the molded parts from us, and then if they wanted to buy that one stamp part and reduce their vendor base, they'd have that opportunity to do that from West Coast Gasket. So that's kind of one of the things that really helps us as a company diversify our clientele is the variety of manufacturing expertise we have here. We also have a water jet cutter for water jet cutting either rubber, metal parts out, that we do a lot of small volume prototyping with our water jet cutter. It's very similar to a laser, but you can't use a laser on rubber, and a lot of times a laser will leave a scarring or a marking on metal parts that the water jet cut won't do. So that's been another manufacturing capability that gives us a little more diversification to manufacturing.
So all that manufacturing capability is housed in your 50,000 square foot Brea facility?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, great. Thanks for that overview. I always love talking to the business owner about their business because you can feel it, and I feel it over the phone, you know, through the excitement and passion that you have for your business here 30 years after you decided to go into business for yourself and launched West Coast Gasket in your extra room in your house. I'd like to ask you, you know, because when we've been talking, as I've gotten to know you, you know, you've seen a lot of business cycles in 30 years. You know, we talked about 79 a little bit and the things that you've seen since then. But, you know, let's focus on the recent past. You know, we're just here now in the beginning of the second quarter, kind of almost halfway through April. But can I ask you, Lewis, you know, how was the first quarter relative to what you had expected the first quarter to be for your business?
Well, you know, again, we have this 24/7 news thing, and everybody's got, you know, the economy. And we didn't expect it to be a great quarter. And January and February were down months for us, and we were a little disappointed in what they happened. We did see March pick up considerably. It just seemed like somebody turned the switch on about March 1st, and the orders started coming in, and we had what we consider a very good March. And March has always been one of our barometer months that we use for how the year's going to go. I don't know if it's the 31 days in March or it's the beginning of a spring and the East Coast gets out of their winter thaw and people start buying and the Christmas season's over. They paid all their Christmas bills off and people start spending again. I don't really have an explanation for it, but we thought that March was a very good month as far as sales concern. And that's kind of what I follow. I follow sales. I figure if we get the order, it'll get out the other end. But I'm always worried about the orders and the sales end of it. So we felt that March was a very strong month for us, and we really felt like people were starting to kind of shake loose a little bit. And we saw a lot of activity of blanket orders that weren't placed in January and February finally getting placed in March. And I think that contributed to what we thought is a kind of a slow January, February, because a lot of people were just afraid to place those annual blankets that usually come around in those months. And then time March came around, they realized the earth wasn't spinning off its axis and the sky wasn't falling. And, you know, and then finally, oh, I guess we are going to survive and, you know, we need to buy this stuff before we run out.
So what does that mean in your I know you're not an economist, you're a business owner, but that's what other business owners, that's who they look to, you know, kind of eye to eye. So what's your sense of the second quarter from what you've seen here in March and kind of what you're seeing in April as April started?
Well, just my personal opinion, and West Coast Gasket is a pretty good barometer, I've always thought, of kind of the overall business climate because we sell to so many different kinds of industries kind of across the gamut. I mean, Southern California is really a great place to be in business for what we do because you know, if it has a nut and bolt, it has a gasket or a stamping or something. So there's so many different industries that we handle. I think things are starting to shake loose a little bit. And just my personal opinion, I don't think the economy is going to rocket off, you know, into a spaceship and be just humming like it was a few years ago. But I think we're going to muddle along here for the next 6 months, 9 months, year. And again, you know, the earth's not spinning off its axis, the sky's not falling. But I think people are realizing that, you know, we're going to be okay and that the economy's not going to sink into the depths of recession and that things are going to be all right and that the business is going to rebound, not a, you know, immediate back to 5% quarterly growth, but we are going to see some growth. And you know, I think that people are learning to live with new rules and new taxes and new president, and I think things will be okay. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I've always been a half glass full kind of guy.
And I think most entrepreneurs and successful business people are. You have to find the opportunity and all of that to be able to exploit it. And I'm glad to hear what you say because I know a lot of the members of our Renaissance Executive Forums groups, it wasn't that they were seeing necessarily a bad year this year, but there was so much uncertainty and then fear either brought on by all the uncertainty or the media and like you said, you know, a couple times, the 24/7 always on news looking for stories that I'm thinking your story about Q1, it resonates with a number of the members that I work with on a regular basis that we kind of got through Q1 and we're seeing some improvement in the towards the end of the quarter, and I'm glad to hear you echo that as well, and you know, see kind of a stabilization, if you will, because that's really what business owners need. They just need to understand what the playing field is, what the landscape is, to be able to be successful. Uncertainty is probably one of the bigger enemies to a business owner and top executive, trying to plot a course through an uncertain time. But, you know, when we were talking previously, Lewis, you had mentioned that also out of that uncertainty was an opportunity for you to do some things differently, and that West Coast Gasket was responding to the current market forces in a different way. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? We have about 4 minutes left here, and I did want you to, you know, help our audience to understand how you've kind of you're doing things differently inside your firm.
Well, we understand that, you know, a lot of clients, our customers, are not doing the volume of business they've done in the past, but we also understand a lot of our competition is not doing the volume they did, and maybe they didn't plan as well as West Coast Gasket for the slower economic times that we're experiencing right now. And we've noticed that in one case we have a large competitor that does a rubber extrusions, and for some reason beyond my understanding, they decided they no longer wanted to do anything that was less than, say, $1,000 or $1,500 for an extrusion job, and that was their minimum. Well, West Coast Gasket kind of shines in that small to medium-run rubber extrusion. That's kind of our forte, so to speak. And so we were able to kind of swoop in behind them and say, hey, listen, if you don't want to pay that $1,500 minimum extrusion, we'll do the job for, you know, less. You know, maybe $1,000, maybe $800, maybe $1,200. And so we were able to capture some business going after what we could perceive as kind of an ill-fated decision to raise minimums in a economic time that maybe people just don't want to buy that kind of volume. So we get a foothold in the account. We do a good job. So when the bigger job does come along, then we're in and we've got a relationship built up and we just outsell them. One other case that we've noticed, we have a competitor of ours that does molded rubber parts and some stampings, was purchased by another company. And this particular company was a kind of a low-cost provider, kind of a, you know, a very low markup type of person, and that was their philosophy, and everybody has a different philosophy. We do not advertise ourselves as the least expensive guy in the block. We have to be competitive because, you know, that's the way it is in the world. You have to be competitive. But we felt that we provided a little added value to the part, and that if you needed something and you wanted it on time and you wanted quality and you wanted to make sure you're getting what you ordered, that's what we provide. And so when I realized they were being purchased by another company, I thought, well, perhaps some of their prices are going to go up because the philosophy of the purchasing company is not the same as the philosophy of the people they are purchasing. So we've kind of followed around in that and had a couple opportunities arise from that particular thing. So I think the main thing to do is to kind of know your industry, know your competitors, and make sure that if you see things changing with your competitors, you're there to maybe, you know, pick up a little extra business that they may be neglecting or not taking care of.
That's a really interesting lesson for our listening audience, which is people react differently and have different planning skills. And if your planning skills are a competitive advantage, then using that in the marketplace to garner new business and it is really an opportunity in these economic times. I think that's a key takeaway, hopefully, that many of our listeners will kind of reflect on as they, you know, look at how they inside their firms can react to this economy and what they're seeing in the future. So thanks for that example, Lewis. I appreciate that. We only have about a minute left. I would like to ask you, is there anything else about West Coast Gasket that we've not talked about today that you'd like to say to the audience or things that you'd like to cover that we didn't get a chance to get to?
Well, you said it earlier, Rick, is that, you know, I am proud of this business. It's been a really fun 30 years, and in retrospect, it doesn't seem like 30 years, but it never does looking back on things you enjoy doing. We've built a very fine organization here with a lot of very good people that have been with me. I have 5-6 people that have been here 20 plus years. And 20 years ago, we didn't have that many people. And we just try to do a good job for our clients and our customers and make sure they get what they want, when they want it, and how they want it. Quality is a very important issue with us. We do a lot of aerospace work And, you know, that is a very high-quality type of demand product. And we're always striving to improve our work here, and we've got a customer survey that we send out to have customers, you know, critique our work here and make sure that we're doing a good job. So I would just tell everybody that, you know, West Coast Gasket, if you're looking for, you know, it sounds like a commercial, if you're looking for people that want to do a good job for you, we're those people. And I've really enjoyed it. And if anybody ever wants to contact me, you know, Lewis Russell at West Coast Gasket.
Okay, so that's your email?
Oh, my email is L Russell, LRUSSELL, at westcoastgasket.com.
And your website?
westcoastgasket.com.
Well,
very
Lewis,
nice
I,
website.
I would encourage our listening audience to take a minute and check it out, since they're probably online right now listening to this. I want to thank you for taking the time out of what I know is a busy schedule to be here. It's been a pleasure to interview you. I'd like to invite you back at some future point. We'll, you know, see another forum session that we can have you as a guest. But I do appreciate the fact that you spent this half hour with our listening audience and gave them the kind of benefit of your 30-plus years of business ownership. So thank you, Lewis.
Thank you, Rick, for the opportunity to speak on your program.
Great. That's Lewis Russell, ladies and gentlemen, with West Coast Gasket. I encourage you to look into his firm if you have an interest. And I believe our second guest this afternoon is on the line now. Let me check. Mike, are you there?
Hi, Rick. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, Mike Haney, ladies and gentlemen, is president and owner of his own firm as well. His firm is S&H Rubber. I guess we have a theme. In the sense that we had West Coast Gasket, and now we have Mike Haney with S&H Rubber. Mike, I'd like to, you know, begin the conversation. And again, I want to thank you in advance for being a guest on our show, and to welcome you to this kind of session. I don't know if you've had a chance to kind of be listening to the first part of the show, but you get an understanding for where we're kind of what we're talking about today. But Mike, your story is a little bit different than Lewis's story in that you're a third generation business owner. Can you tell our audience about your path to S&H Rubber?
Sure. Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, third generation, so I pretty much grew up in the rubber business. My dad and my grandfather both had rubber companies. My grandfather ran a large rubber company in Brea called Kirkhill Rubber, and my dad had his company, this company, S&H Rubber, in nearby Fullerton. I worked at both of the companies as summer jobs growing up, mainly in high school, and then continued through college. Working as summer jobs, and then let's see, I graduated college in '95, and then came to work full time here at S&H Rubber, doing sales and estimating, and covered a lot of jobs on those over those summer jobs. You know, a lot of anything from driving the delivery truck to cleaning molds to working in the office, and. And then around 1999, let's see, yeah, I've been here for a couple of years full-time. And then my dad retired, and at the same time, the vice president of the company, she became suddenly ill and also had to retire. And so there I was. I became leadership position. I was the president here since then, 1999, around there. Yeah.
So can you that must have been an interesting time for you to be put in that position. You had experience, obviously, with the firm, but as many of us know who go from being a member of a team to being the boss and the final decision maker, it's a different world, isn't it? When the buck stops here, as they say.
It sure is. You know, growing up, you know, in the industry and being underneath at the different companies underneath my grandfather and my dad, as you say, I always had them to look up to and rely on their experience, but it does take on a whole new meaning when the buck stops here. And, I missed that for sure when my dad retired. And I wish over the years I had time to work with my grandfather more. But one of the things we had certainly here at S&H Rubber is the company's been in business for many, many years. You know, that was 10 years ago, so that, you know, we've been in business 32 years at that time. So we had a lot of procedures and in place that, you know, kept the company going well. We had a lot of long-time employees as well. Many of our employees had been with the company 20-plus years, and we still have several of those employees with us today. But it definitely was more challenging when I became president, that's for sure.
Can you give our listening audience, Mike, a sense for your firm? What is it that S&H Rubber does?
Okay. Yeah, we are a manufacturer. We mold and extrude rubber products. So we're basically a job shop for rubber parts. We don't have any of our own designs. Customers come to us with the blueprint. We have a mold made and mold or extrude their finished part.
Okay. And you said earlier that your firm has been in business for 42 years?
That's correct.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, my dad had worked for Kirkhill back in the 60s. That was the company that my grandfather ran. And Kirkhill was a large company, and, you know, they were really growing, and they were turning away small orders. So at the time, my dad and my grandfather decided, hey, let's go set up this company for you, my dad, Steve, and Kirkhill can refer the short-run orders that we're passing up down to your company. And so for years, that's how S&H started in 1967. Kirkhill would refer some of the short-run business down, and S&H quickly grew over the years and established its own customer base and has grown to, you know, 42 years later, what we are today.
So, Mike, you've been in the business for 14 years yourself, personally, right? 1995 to today.
Correct.
And so when you came into the quarter, you know, you might have heard us talking earlier about the uncertainty and, you know, weren't quite sure, and a lot of apprehension people had about this year with all the uncertainty that was in the environment and the economy, global economy. How was the first quarter relative to your expectations for this first quarter, Mike?
Relative to my expectations, honestly, I expected it to be better. Mainly because we had such a great 2008. Particularly the first half of 2008 was actually our best year ever. And so things started to slow down in November, December, but they always do. And they usually pick up very, very well in January, especially February and March. So I was expecting, you know, coming off of that great year, I was really expecting the first quarter to be okay, even though there's a lot of doom and gloom out there on the radio, and I know the other manufacturers that were supplying to the rubber or to the automotive industry were struggling. A lot of our work goes to aerospace and other industries, and it was still holding on pretty good through 2008, so I thought it would hold up better in the first quarter, but it didn't. It, you know, things really, really slowed down in January, and, you know, so we're holding our own, and now here we are into the second quarter, so we're starting to see some improvement, so we look forward to that.
Mm-hmm. I guess you anticipated my following question then, which was you kind of got through the first quarter, and now we're facing into Q2. We're a couple weeks into the second quarter. Again, as I said to Lewis earlier, you know, you're not an economist. You know, your advice is from a business owner's perspective. But again, as we know from our forum meetings, some of the best advisors are people who are your peers, who are kind of seeing the world in a similar way to you, and maybe with a little bit different perspective. So kind of long-winded question, Mike, but just, you know, your sense is from a quoting activity or things that are going on in the marketplace, what are you seeing that, you know, how's Q2 shaping up for you, do you think? How do you see it out there in the marketplace?
I think Q2 will definitely be better than the first quarter. I've been getting some feedback and having a lot of discussions with our customers, and there appears to be some more activities out there. I think a lot of our parts end up in other sub-tier companies that supply to OEMs, and I think a lot of them have been, you know, leaning out their inventory, and so which has slowed down our business. But they're going to start running out of parts here in the second quarter, and I think they're going to have to start replenishing those inventory levels. And again, I'm getting that, a lot of that feedback from my customers who, because a lot of times I don't talk directly to OEMs such as the airplane manufacturers, but my customers do. And you mentioned quoting. I am seeing a lot of quoting. Here at SNH, I do all the estimating, and my desk has been very, very busy in the last couple months with quotes. Although, you know, a lot of those haven't been turning into orders recently, you know, in this second quarter, if I even get a small portion of all the quotes that I've done, that'll be a significant amount of business, so I am looking forward to that. And I have been calling as many of those potential customers as I can, following up on the quotes, and there does seem to be some positive response out there that people think they're going to get the work as well.
Okay, so it's interesting because you know, I'm not you know, we've talked before about supply chain and I think in uncertain times, my experience is people delay making a decision, especially a purchasing decision, trying to hold on as long as they can until they absolutely need the parts. But then when they do need the parts, there's a, you know, you got to make up the time that they chose not to place the order. Are you in your environment, Mike, in your supply chain, are you seeing that at all where there's an increase when people do make the decision to move forward with a purchase that they're also asking for, you know, can you get it here yesterday kind of a thing?
Yeah,
are you seeing any of that?
We sure are. And it, you know, it comes at an interesting time because when we're not that busy, you would think everything's going to be kind of slow. But like you said, sure enough, an order comes through and it's an extra rush. And it's like, you know, I feel like telling the customer sometimes, you know, how this is the only order you've given us all week and it has to be a rush. But like our customers, we're glad to be getting that order, and that's what we're seeing up the supply line is everyone's out there getting anything that they can, and they want to provide that great service and you know, to try to get more business. So let's react quickly and you know, get it up the supply chain.
You know, Mike, an interesting conversation that you and I have had, which I'd like you to talk about if you're comfortable with it, is recently your firm's gone back through for ISO recertification, and that's a major you know, undertaking for a firm of any size, and there's a lot of value that can be derived from becoming ISO 9001 compliant and receiving that certification. Can you talk to me about, help me to understand what the impact of that has been on your business?
Sure. You're right. It has been a major undertaking here and something that we're very proud of achieving, that ISO certification in 2008. And, you know, as a manufacturing company, especially for aerospace, you know, we've had a quality manual at our company for many years, you know, 10-plus years. But it was really just to satisfy our customer requirements. And until recently, you know, during the process of preparing all of our procedures and our whole quality manual for the certification, I sat down and I was thinking of all the effort, the time, effort, and the money that I was spending in this company to achieve the certification. And I start thinking, man, this, you know, we can't just do this to get the certification and put this quality manual on our shelf. We've got to make it useful. And so I really dove in and tried to fully understand what the quality manual and ISO tries to achieve. And it really, there's some really good stuff in there. There are a lot of processes and components of that program that can help you measure your business, help you improve your processes, and ultimately, you know, get you more business because you're going to run leaner, less rejections, quicker deliveries, and you're really, you know, improving your service to your customer. And so, again, in implementing that system, I think we've gone from, you know, the paperwork, our work instructions, and other procedures in our company that were really just for show, they've really become living documents now. I've really gotten everyone involved in writing the procedures of the manual, rewriting our work instructions continuously, and our other procedures, you know, how we run this company. And it's really been a team, kind of a team-building experience by getting these, everybody from the production line, you know, into the office, getting them involved and going through the manual process. It, you know, again, it turned out to be a good learning experience. And I'd say, you know, another advantage of that is that all of our key employees have a better understanding of how the parts and the paperwork run through this company. And so slowly but surely, you know, we're turning into a smoother operation. The continuous improvement mentality is becoming part of our culture, and that is what I've really found as a benefit by implementing that ISO program. So what started out to be, I thought was going to be a burden and just a pain that was going to be, you know, a requirement put on by our customers, it's turned out to be a good experience and money and time well spent. So we're very proud of that.
I can speak from both personal experience and also experience vicariously of working with other business executives who run manufacturing companies and companies that receive, you know, ISO certification, et cetera, that it's tone at the top that is a phrase that I've heard frequently, which is as the leadership embraces ISO and other quality standards, business process improvements, the rest of the organization follows suit. And to hear you as the leader and owner of your firm embracing it to that level, it's really good to hear because it does say that the rest of your employees and leadership team are going to follow by example, Mike. So I'm glad to hear you speak that way of the way you've embraced it.
I'd say to add to that too, you know, because I've embraced it over the years as well, but I didn't include the other people in the company because sometimes as a president and the quality manager, I was just trying to meet the requirements of the customer. So I would write the manual, I would fill out the forms, and I would make the presentation to prove that we had a good quality system. But that was a fault of mine until this year when I really included everyone in the company in the whole process. And they can see that I was embracing it. Like you say, that's when I think it really is now becoming part of our culture.
Mm-hmm. And I have to believe, too, is, you know, you talked earlier about people wanting quick turnaround, and I would just, having experience with what happens when you embrace ISO and other quality and 5S and the other initiatives that can go along with leaner manufacturing, et cetera, let me ask a question without answering it for you. Has that experience of ISO certification helped you be more responsive here recently to customer requests?
I would say it has. And, you know, because as you mentioned, some of those processes that go along with Lean and ISO, because of, you know, kind of this slow time, we have had more time to fine-tune our manual, do internal audits, and do some house cleaning. And interesting enough, some of that house cleaning has turned into sales opportunities because we're going through old files, we're going through old molds, and cleaning out some of the areas of the company, and we're uncovering leads that customers we haven't spoke with in a few years. And so we're getting on the phone and giving them a call, and in more than one occasion, it turned into new business with that customer.
Wow.
And what we really hope for as well is, going through some of this house cleaning and fine-tuning these processes, leaning out our operations, is when business does pick up, we're ready for it. We are leaner mm-hmm. and meaner and just better, prepared to take on more business.
And who's to predict when that time is? We all have opinions, but we all came into the year with an opinion about how the first quarter was going to be. And, you just never know what's around the next corner or what the economy is going to, how it's going to move through 2009. So being nimble is important, because I find, too, in these in this time, sometimes people over-focus on the downside, and then they miss the upside opportunity. So positioning your company the way you're doing sounds like a real opportunity potentially for your clients as business continues to improve. We have just a few minutes left. I see it's, probably a couple minutes left. But, is there anything else about S&H Rubber, Mike, that you were hoping to talk about today that we didn't get a chance to cover?
Well, I think maybe we touched on that we're a molder and extruder, but we've been a molding company for 42 years, but we've just recently added on our capabilities of extrusion, and we've expanded those capabilities basically because of our customers asked us to. Many of our existing customers that buy molded parts from us, over the years they've asked us, why don't you guys get into extrusion? Because many of them also buy extruded products. And, in the past we turned that business away. We just focused on our molded and we didn't have the equipment. But now that we've purchased that equipment and we have the capabilities, we're really trying to push the extrusion business. And we feel this product, gives our foot in the door to other industries as well. Because we do focus in aerospace, but a lot of the extrusion business can be some of the more commercial products, and so having this new capability, hopefully we can diversify our customer base to help protect us in these slow times as well, so we don't follow the trends of one industry so much. So although the decision to, expand that capability, it was really in motion a couple of years ago, these recent slow months have provided us an opportunity to kind of focus on that new extrusion business. Here in the office, it's given us more time to direct our marketing efforts, towards extrusion, talk to customers about their extruded product. And then out in the back of the plant, we're using this downtime to experiment and learn how to run our new equipment. So that's an exciting time for us. We're excited to have this new capability and look forward to, just showing that to our customers and potential new customers.
And that's a key quality that and characteristic of an entrepreneur and business owner that I admire working with them is finding the opportunity within a challenging business environment. And many of us find the first quarter to have been a challenging quarter and moving through it. And here you are looking at the opportunity for this new capability inside your plant. And maybe if things were different, you wouldn't have had the focus on it. And sometimes, to borrow another cliche, necessity is the mother of invention, and to have this time where you're able to spend some time and market that new capability with more focus, in the long run, you may look back on that and go, well, that was fortunate, right? And the silver lining of that was this, and now it's a whole other business model or business line and capability that you didn't have previous. So you're to be commended. If someone, Mike, wanted to get in touch with you specifically or your firm, how would they do that?
All of my contact information is on our website at shrubber.com. That's www.shrubber.com.
Okay. And so the best way to find out more about your firm is to visit your website, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Fantastic. Please All right. Do. Well, again, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time out of what I know is a busy day for you. I really value your openness and candor in talking with our listening audience. And, you know, again, I'd like to offer you the opportunity to come back at a future in a future segment of Critical Mass and be a guest on another radio show where we'll, you know, talk about some other topic that's appropriate for you and your business. Are you willing to do that?
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you for the time, Rick. I'd love to.
Okay, well, have a good day, Mike, and I'll talk to you again. So I'd like to say, don't forget, folks, to listen next week when Ken Podolivo, founder and president of ProGrowth, will be Doug's guest, and he'll be talking about how the economy is affecting the service provider sector and what they're doing to respond to that. For everyone on Critical Mass staff, for the greatest partner in the world, Doug Gefeller, I'd like to say thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you in a couple weeks. Have a good day.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.